I don't know. I haven't had a chance.
I'm calling this meeting to order. We have a quorum. First thing to do will be the minutes. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager, have you had a chance to take a look at the minutes?
I have. I moved them.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager moves the minutes from April 16th, 2024. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Okay, first we have a bit of housekeeping. We'd like to send House File 4975 to the Committee on Ways and Means so that we have multiple paths for matching with the Senate. Before we move the bill, is there any discussion, questions, comments?
Thank you.
Would you like to move the bill?
Sure. I move House File 4975 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So Chair Aiken moves 4975 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. And the motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. Next, we have House File 4177. So on this one, I think we're first going to move it to Ways and Means.
Don't we need to amend it? We have an amendment.
Okay. I'm told we have to make the motion to move it first. If you would like to do that, Chair Aiken.
Thank you. I move the House File 4177 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So Chair Aiken moves House File 4177 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and you have a DE2?
So, but this is the A1 or the A2. I'm sorry, I'm getting confused procedurally.
My understanding is the A2 is to the DE2, so we first do the DE2.
Okay, so I move the DE2 to get the bill in the shape that we'd like to consider it.
All right, any discussion? All right, seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, say nay. And the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So now we have the A2.
We're going to get there.
That's right.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move an author's amendment, the A2, please.
All right, this is the A2 to get the bill in the shape you'd like it. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. And the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So discussion to the bill as amended.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's other comments, but I will just say the amendment that we just adopted, the author's amendment, was really just some technical fixes with some number changes and a couple little very brief changes. So with that, if there's other discussion.
All right, member discussion and questions? Nothing. All right, seeing none. Okay, Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you meaning to the amendment that we just adopted or the whole DE? Is that
the bill, the DE.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe the author wants to go through the components of the DE, if it's at all different than what the underlying bill was.
Chair Aiken.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative, so this is, the DE is the bill that we went through yesterday, and so the bill that Mr. Eloff went through and that we discussed in committee yesterday. So that, and the one that we, the amendment from today was just some minor technical changes to that, changing a couple of words and references.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you. So I do have a couple questions then.
Great.
Okay. So one thing in the CPACE projects, so we, you know, we had a lot of conversation about this, and I voiced my concerns then about removing the word cost effective from the parameters. And I see that you kept that language in. And can you just let us know, why are we keeping it in? I know we had quite a bit of conversation about the concerns, and what is it accomplishing by taking that word out?
Chair Aiken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. So I certainly understand and hear your concerns about the eliminating that language. I think in talking with the representative, I believe his name was Ben Davis, if I recall, we were talking about whether removing that language would prevent cost effective from being considered in these projects, and he said no, that it would not. And I think that since these are financing that's done commercially and not, it's not the state financing it, I don't think the investments are going to be made in something that isn't cost effective. And I think there was just a limitation that was kept with that terminology that prevented some of the other projects that they wanted to be considered.
Representative Rarick.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a different question. So with the geothermal energy system, the Hollins bill, the components of 3949, they had asked for $10 million, and it sounded like they needed the whole $10 million to actually install the geothermal for this nonprofit organization. We also had a great deal of discussion about that, and now you've only given them $5 million as opposed to $10 million. And when I looked at their most recent 990 on the IRS website, which may not be reflective of the most recent, which would be 22, you can only see 21 on the IRS website, the 990. Their total revenue was $2.5 million, of which 1.5 was from government sources already. So I'm wondering if they only receive $5 million and the project was supposed to be $10 million and their whole budget is $2.5 million, how are they going to accomplish what they need to accomplish? Are we just setting them up to fail, Madam Chair?
Madam Chair?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that's a great question. And I don't know if Representative Hollins has been in communication with them at all, but I know in talking in the conversation that day, it felt to me that there were other funding sources that they were continuing to look into as well. And so my hope is that they would be able to look for some other sources. When our RDA money this year was the way it was, I just didn't see it as appropriate to put $10 million toward that one single project. I think we had a lot of things that can be working to improve our situation around renewable energy sources. And so I don't know if Representative Hollins has a response.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Rarick. So I have been in touch with the folks at Sebanthony, and they are extremely excited that we included $5 million for them. They have continued, even throughout this entire process, to continue searching for other sources of funding for this, and I don't think they're anticipating stopping that search. And so if they were able to get $5 million, they would absolutely take it and be able to use it moving forward. So I don't think that this is something that we're setting them up for failure. And in fact, by showing some of this funding coming from the state legislature, it strengthens their ability to get other funding sources because they can show multiple sources that they're getting funding from to do this work.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, is there a deadline that they have to expend the funds by?
I would imagine that's in the bill length.
We're all looking.
Yeah.
I see in the bill language it says 2028. Representative Rarick.
Thank you. Great. And then I see that we don't have our researcher, unfortunately. Mr. Eloff is not here, but I had raised the question about setting precedent, and we have never given to a nonprofit out of the RDA. This would be setting precedent. We were having that discussion. He was going to look into it, but to his memory, and he's been here 30-some years, that he didn't remember a nonprofit, and I'm wondering if you had done some of that research to see if we are, in fact, setting precedent with giving that much money to a nonprofit all of the RDA.
Representative Hollins has that, unless you would like to.
Oh.
Yeah, Representative Hollins.
I mean, I don't want.
No, you're not butting in. Please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. So I, because when this was brought up earlier, and I said, oh, I'm not really sure. And then I thought about it. We absolutely have, because it was my alma mater, St. Thomas, that we did, in fact, give money to their microgrid, to fund their microgrid project. I want to say, was it last year? Year before last year. So it's not setting precedent that we have done this before.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I mean, that's, I appreciate that, Representative Hollins and Chair Ecom and Mr. Chair, but this is a little different. This is a nonprofit organization that could set up a geothermal system for their campus where the St. John's was for development of renewable energy, right? Sorry, St. Thomas. Thank you for the correction, St. Thomas. So it was to further, they were looking at microgrids and they were looking at, you know, establishing some new techniques where this is just established, or this is just installing current technology as a geothermal system in a nonprofit organization. So they're very different. One is more of a research base and the other one is just taking care of a heating system for a nonprofit organization. I see them as completely different. I really wish Mr. Eloff was here so I could hear if there was any other time that we'd actually expended money out of the RDA for a nonprofit where it was just an installation of something, not like furthering the technology. I have a concern about that. Oh, the chair has something.
Madam Chair.
Can I maybe just say this bill is going to continue to move forward, and I am hopeful that we can get some information for Bob while he maybe isn't here right now, or from Mr. Eloff. We can get that information, and it's going to Ways and Means next, and I will certainly make sure that it is there. We have the answer for that, and so we still have an opportunity to make changes if necessary.
I also see Representative Hollins wanting to add something.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. And I feel comfortable saying this as I am, an alma mater of, or I am alumni of this institution. But I would say the main difference between giving money to St. Thomas and giving money to Sebanthony is that St. Thomas has an endowment of $653.3 million, and Sebanthony has an annual budget of, what was it, $2.5 million? So the reality is Sebanthony needs this money a lot more than St. Thomas does, but we still gave it to St. Thomas, which is a nonprofit.
Representative Brer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Right. I understand your point, but we are still giving a substantial amount of money, $5 million, to a nonprofit to just change out a heating system, which is something we've never done with the RDA money that I know of. So we'll get that answer when we come to Ways and Means. But moving on, the anaerobic digester, we're kind of the same problem. So they'd asked us, I know that the gap, I should say, initially it was $30 million. That was the gap. And they put a dot, 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 because they knew there wasn't even $30 million in the RDA. Mm-hmm. But now we're just doing $5 million. So the same question is, there's a big difference between $30 million and $5 million. So have you had conversations with them and how they're going to make up the gap for that?
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Rarick. Yesterday, you may recall that Commissioner Victoria Reinhart was here testifying in support of the bill and thanking us for the investments. And if I recall from their testimony that day, is anything they can get, they can then use to get matching dollars. And so their ask was 30, but I think their hope was anything we can get will help us to that goal.
Yeah, but I'm assuming Representative Rarick has another question.
I sure do. As my team slowly starts coming in. Okay, so then the last thing that is of great concern to me out of the RDA, because, you know, I look for, you know, specifically at RDA money because those are my people. That comes from Xcel Energy ratepayers. Those are my people. Mm-hmm. It is a tax on the casks. And we do this only in the state of Minnesota. There is no other state in the entire nation that puts an additional fee or tax on a cask. It's $500,000 per cask per year for Prairie Island. And in my community of Monticello, it's $300,000. Did I say million? It's $500,000, I should say, or $300,000, depending on which site, per cask per year. So it accumulates quickly, and it's coming from the ratepayers. And it was meant to further develop renewable energy, which I feel like we're, you know, kind of doing things at lightning speed now, just collectively. But to that point, so the solar app program, Representative Carroll's bill, mm-hmm. $1.7 million. So this is a program that's already free to government entities if they so choose to use it. Can you explain again why we're doing $1.7 million for a free solar app that they could already access without cost?
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the incentive, and if I recall the numbers were maybe, and Representative Carroll isn't here, so maybe if I can get Mr. Moles on to help me with where the bill language is. if I recall, the incentives were intended for cities of different sizes in order to incent them to take a look at this. I think ultimately, if I recall the numbers, it was $5,000 per municipality.
Five to 20.
And if I recall also, the 20,000 was for larger cities, if that is. To encourage them to consider it, and it will save them money in the long run, but to recognize that, to learn a little about it, to give them the time administratively to focus their people or their staff and to train them on how to use it, it's a small amount to try and get them to participate and to at least consider it, but not requiring them.
Representative Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, knowing that Minnesota is the only place in the entire nation that actually has a task fee that goes into a renewable development account, and it's tens of millions of dollars every year. I don't remember the exact number, but around 30 maybe million a year. It's another burden on the ratepayers. It makes energy more expensive. So at some point, it would be a really great idea, I think, to dial some of that back, because it is a very expensive endeavor for every single taxpayer and ratepayer. But moving on, let's talk about removing the cap on fuel switching, and what are the limits that the utilities now have, if any, for removing the cap?
Madam Chair, let's.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I, Mr. Representative Stevenson, this is about.
I'll come back to myself.
That would be awesome if you stayed, because you're going to know this bill a lot better than I do. I need my pages numbered more better. Let's see.
Perhaps, Representative Eric, can you repeat your question?
Sure. So this is in the eco bill, and it's removing the cap on fuel switching. And what are the limits now on utilities if we're removing the cap on fuel switching?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, you're asking what were the limits under existing law that are being removed, or are you asking what would the limit be subsequent to the removal?
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So after in this bill, we're removing the caps on the fuel switching. So what limits are left for utilities since you're removing the caps?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, I think that this is in the context of the energy savings goals and counting fuel switching towards energy savings goals. So you're talking, there would not, I believe, and I need to go back and look at the bill language and get my head back into this, but my recollection is that you'd have to be within that limit to get credit towards your. Am I making sense here?
Representative Rarick?
Yeah, you're getting there. So I'll just phrase it a little bit easier. We're removing the caps, which I know that somebody I know very well was not thrilled about. And so I'm just wondering, what's the net effect of removing the caps? What happens when we remove these caps?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rarick, well, for one thing, it will make it easier for our IOUs and all our utilities to meet their energy savings goals. So that is probably the most important effect of the bill, and it will allow for consumers to benefit from those fuel efficient switches.
Representative Burr.
Okay, thank you. All right. That's one perspective. I'll leave it at that. Okay. I'm going to ask one more question then, since I've got my team here. I'm going to let them ask some questions. Why is it assumed that replacement power is more expensive when congestion occurs? So we're talking about the grid-enhancing technology. So as we develop these grid-enhancing technologies that are supposed to lower energy or electricity costs, Yeah. So can you just talk a little bit about your thoughts about the grid enhancing technologies and the underlying thought that without having to replace power, that's a less expensive option? And I guess this kind of goes back to what Xcel Energy is also doing. So they're in their new IRP, they're adding a gas plant to their options because, well, you can read the IRP, but it has to do with that. So they're actually, they're moving to actually adding more onto their system. And I'm wondering if you can say how that works with the grid enhancing technologies, because the assumption was that if we're adding replacement power, that that's more expensive when congestion occurs.
Madam Chair?
Well, maybe I'll take a first crack, yeah. And then the author of the bill, Chair Kraft, can follow up where I fail. I think the intent of this bill is to take what is there and get the most out of it. And so not having to make financial investments, but able to maximize the power that is there and to utilize the lines to their utmost. And so I think that the grid enhancing technology provides that opportunity rather than a full investment of new lines and new transmission. And Mr. Chair, I'll let you fill in where maybe I didn't quite.
Madam Chair, Representative, that was quite good. Is there a specific, you seem to be referencing a specific language. Is there a line number you want me to address?
No, it was sort of the premise of the whole bill that you had, Mr. Chair.
Ah, okay. So yes, this is for transmission lines. There's this new type of solutions, grid enhancing technologies, that for relatively small amounts of money that can be deployed in relatively short period of time, generally you're talking months to a year, that you can increase capacity on lines from 10 to 40%. And that those haven't been used as much in this country as in other places. And so this is just that we should be looking at that and taking that into account. And I will say that there's quite a bit of interest in this around the country. The Biden administration actually just put out something about grid enhancing technology. So I think this will enable Minnesota to pay a little more attention to this and get early on in this.
Mr. Chair, one final question.
Representative Rarick.
Okay, thank you. So I guess my point is, if Xcel Energy is saying, well, we need a new gas plant, whether it's a peaker or combined cycle or whatever it is, the cost of that versus how much you'd have to save in grid enhancing technology, have you done like a cost analysis to see, are you actually saving money with all the grid enhancing technologies versus doing what they need to do? Because we do have to make sure that we've got stable electricity, right? Because we've got intermittents like crazy all over the whole system. We're gonna do more intermittent energy sources. You need baseload. So have you looked at the comparison between something like a peaker versus how many grid enhancing technologies you'd have to put on the system in order to not have to invest in a peaker?
Yeah, Representative Rarick. So the bill actually doesn't mandate the use of grid enhancing technologies. It says to go study them, look if they're cost effective and present that to the PUC in a study, and then over time to build in the examination of them in the every 2 years transmission plan that the utilities already do. So I would imagine those kinds of trade-off decisions about grid enhancing technologies, maybe reconductoring, maybe new transmission lines, maybe this would be made by the PUC. This is to provide that information to make the best decision for Minnesota ratepayers. Representative Rarick,
I'm good. I'm okay. Gonna turn over to the rest of my
next
team.
We have Representative Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being a little late. My Iron Range veterans were down today, so I had to go meet with them. So I just wanted to jump in on one of the things that was added in the A2 amendment. So it's going to be on page 2, line 1, where we increase the zero energy ready home program for the amount that can be used for administrative costs from $85,000 to $150,000. And I guess I'm just going to put on like my economic development hat. Why are we going to be using 30% of that amount for admin costs? Doesn't that seem a little high? Like, I know when we talk other projects or anything, we try to keep that number under 15%. Why so high for this?
Madam Chair?
I'll try it again. This is Representative Kraft's bill. But I think that because of a lot of the work that we did last year and the many programs that we have developed, the department is maxed as far as capacity and capabilities. And so I think this is reflective of likelihood of needing to contract it out to help to get this growing.
And Representative Iga, I will add that I agree with you that this is on the high end. And quite frankly, I would have liked to put more dollars into this program. I think it's a great program to incent builders to build zero energy ready homes, and is even more applicable for folks outside of the metro area. But given where we are right now, that was all we're able to do. But I think there's a lot of value in getting it going. And then if it's looking good, we can add more dollars to it in subsequent sessions with a far less administrative load.
All right, Mr. Chair, thank you for that. I appreciate it. It's just, you know, again, when we talk about giving out state dollars, it's just, that's a hard pill to swallow whenever you have 30% of the money you're putting for. It's going to be in admin fees. That's just good government. That's not partisan. That's just, we should be working better to keep that lower so that the money we do invest goes farther. It's just a simple economic development principle. I guess, and then my final question, you know, when I was going through all this, I was hoping with the amount of money we're going to be spending out of the RDA, I was hoping that maybe we would see some work on nuclear, being that we love using the money we get from it. I was just asked the chair, was there any consideration about adding, removing the nuclear energy moratorium or the study that maybe the Senate's talking about? Is that an idea that maybe we can get in conference so we can actually start taking steps in that direction? Because it is very prevalent that we're going to need to diversify our grid with carbon neutral technologies if we're going to be able to support the demand that this electrical transition is going to bring us.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Igo. I certainly think we need to be looking beyond our current types of generation from I'm excited about Xcel and the opportunity for hydrogen. I think there are some great things coming, certainly developments around storage that will help that situation as well. And what I'll say is that in nuclear, the concerns and the issues around nuclear waste are still a concern. And so I think that when we talk to Minnesotans about nuclear, there are certainly people who are pro-nuclear, and there are also people who are very concerned about the waste. And I think when you live close to a plant like Representative Rarick, and when you see the issues with the contamination in the Mississippi River potentially, I think those kinds of things can be concerning to Minnesotans.
Representative Igo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just close. I mean, I think the whole preface of what we've seen coming out of this committee is how, you know, we're trying to be divergent and finding new ways to do something. And I think all we were maybe asking with nuclear is to remove a moratorium so we can actually start studying it a little more with our IOUs and the PUC and other industries so we can have a better understanding of the technologies that are coming out. I think to put up roadblocks and say, well, there's concerns, so we can't move on it. There's plenty of concerns about the legislation we passed last year, and there's concerns about whether our grid's going to be able to support what we're doing right now, but we're still blazing ahead there. So I just, again, we're not totally done with this yet. I'm going to make the final push that we should consider something so we can study nuclear and start looking at the benefits it could have for Minnesota and our industries to keep power affordable and keep the lights on. Thanks.
Representative Switzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to kind of piggyback a little bit on Representative Igo's comments, you know, I think the Senate isn't necessarily considering a lift of the moratorium, but it is considering a study. And, you know, I think when we hear, like, well, people are concerned about that, well, the study would encompass some of those. You know, if you're going through the process of asking people questions and opening up the idea of debate in a real manner that's, you know, actually looking at data, looking at storage, looking at the possibility. I mean, the dynamics of nuclear energy is drastically changing before our eyes. And while it may not be a solution to the issues that we do, I mean, no one in this room believes that we're going to be able to live 100% on wind or solar, right? There's legit, like, you know, the projects that are going through western Minnesota up to Feedbacker is going to be potentially part natural gas, part wind, part solar. You know, it's going to be a myriad of different technologies. And I think if we're, you know, really, you know, looking at, you know, we're not going to have enough battery storage to do this job. We're going to have legitimate base load energy production in the state of Minnesota or in North Dakota or South Dakota or other areas of the MISO grid. And you know, I think we would just ask you to consider that when you're going in negotiations. You know, we're obviously don't have an we may allow you to have an amendment on the floor that would give you a chance to rectify that.
Are you giving me a
no? No, not at all. Not at all. But you know, and just Mr. Chair, would the chair just from a question standpoint, you know, just looking at other issues that have been brought before you, you know, are you considering conversations? I know it was brought up when this bill was brought before us before, particularly with the co-ops. Have you guys continued any conversations from that point on to today? Where are some of those conversations going as far as some of the cooperatives and their conversations?
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Swazinski. And maybe I could ask for a little clarification about the co-ops. And yes, I've been talking with MMUA and MREA about some of the provisions in the bill, especially around interconnection. So yes, we have continued to have conversations and will continue to. So if there are other specifics, I'm...
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's generally where my question was at,
yep.
Really to see, you know, kind of where those conversations are going. And then really from a cap, you know, one of the concerns that I do have is really that unlimited lifting of the cap when it comes to fuel switching. There's a lot of concern with petroleum and propane and natural gas when it comes to really leveraging the idea that we're going to leverage monopolies and their ability to tax and spend in their areas to go after privately owned businesses in propane areas. You know, I really have a big problem with that. I think there's a reason why there had been a limit to fuel switching in years past. And because of the unique nature of the way that the electric utilities have when it comes to ECHO and the rest, and that's what we're seeing. Right now we're seeing a huge expansion what was passed last year of what we warned folks about. We said, this is what's gonna happen. And lo and behold, it's moving in that direction. And it's, you know, it's fun to get invited to Thanksgiving, but not when you're in the turkey.
I'm not laughing at you, I'm laughing with you.
Okay. I'm laughing at you.
Right? And so, you know, when we look at, you know, hey, everyone's happy they're invited to Thanksgiving, right? Unless you're the turkey, unless you're the gas suppliers in the state of Minnesota, unless you're the private businesses that is competing with the monopoly, right? And, you know, I think, you know, we have as a legislature, we have a responsibility to folks that we like and the folks that some of us maybe dislike, I guess. And the idea that we're going to do that and expand that and really try to, you know, press the scales down for market share is unfortunate. And, you know, I think that is what it is. You know, I stand on that, I guess. And, yeah, so kind of going from that point, yeah, I'll open it up if there's other members that have questions or not. But feel free to.
Are there any other questions, comments from members? Seeing none, we'll move to closing comments. Madam Chair.
Well, thank you for the conversation. Thank you for the questions and the interest. And I can say that we will absolutely continue to have conversations with stakeholders as the process continues to proceed. And and there will be an opportunity to conference with the Senate on some of the things that maybe aren't in our bill and that maybe aren't in their bill. So there's certainly the bill isn't going to come back looking the same way it is going out. So and please know that I will have conversations with folks and open to that. Thank you for all of your help with this to the committee. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 4177 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So Chair Ekam renews her motion that House File 4177 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Any final discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
The motion prevails and the bill is re-referred. staff are instructed to make any technical changes as are necessary to the bill. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the chair for some
comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to take a really quick second and thank Minority Leader Swazinski for his partnership and participation in the committee this year. You've always been very respectful, and I have always appreciated that. Certainly grateful to our nonpartisan staff, Mr. Eloff and Ms. Eng. Thank you. Certainly the committee administrator couldn't do this without you, Mr. Molzon, and our committee legislative assistant, Robin Mercer-Taylor. Did I get that? Yeah, I think I did. Thank you. And to our GOP and DFL researchers, Eric Anderson and Mark Nisley, thank you. And my door is open. If there are concerns that people have, please come and talk to me. Happy to keep working on this. And thanks for all your participation.
All right, at that point, watch your emails for any additional meetings. They'll be at the call of the chair. And seeing no further business, we are adjourned.